Ladies and gentlemen. Hey, ladies. What up, fam? Thanks for listening to The Green Room. I am your host. I am Jackie Brown on Instagram. That's I am J-A-C-K-E-E Brown on Insta. Thank you for listening. I hope you're having a glorious summer. Speaking of glorious, on today's show we have legendary Soma from Amsterdam on the podcast. You can reach Soma at Soma Mission on Instagram. That's at Soma, S-O-M-A, M-I-S-S-I-O-N. Soma is a legendary cannabis entrepreneur, plant-based medicine wise person. I don't want to call him a shaman because, you know, I'm still learning about shamanism and the legitimacy of what makes a shaman versus what is just a word people use to market themselves. So I don't know. Let's not get Soma tangled up in that. He has lived a life of experience, hearkening from New York, currently in Amsterdam, growing some of the best amnesia haze I've ever had, and, like I said, has some of the wisest, most entertaining stories. Every single time we see him in Amsterdam, we sat down with him earlier this summer, and he talked a little bit about his background and how he became to be such a experienced cannabis person, but also we talk about other plant-based medicines and his experience with that, and how he used to bless people during the full moon with mind-altering, multi-dimensional experiences. So much so, they would forget their shoes at their house. They'd just be so enlightened. They'd walk out with no shoes. Can you imagine? Can you imagine what that experience is like? You go in, you come out so altered that you're just like, fuck shoes. I'm moving on. I'm going. I'm living. L-I-V-I-N. Sans shoes. Soma's a real great guy. We are blessed to have you on, Soma. Namaste to you and to the rest of you. We hope that you are living positive lives, that you are not getting stuck in your shadows, but you are sitting those shadows in their corner. Put them in time out. You know, it's like our friend Bob Marley said, you can fool some people sometimes, but you can't fool all the people all the time. So now we see the light. What you gonna do? Stand up for your rights.
Yeah. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up.
The fight. What you gonna do, people?
Medication. Your medication makes me high. Just be patient. I'm like a patient trying to find levitation. Run your fingers down my spine. Elevation. Your medication makes me high.
I love you, Mary Jane.
In 1993, I was living in Eugene, Oregon, and I grew a beautiful crop of cannabis. I didn't realize that I was actually medically using it at the point because I was just thinking recreationally.
That's, what was the crop?
It was special weed that my friends had like started with in Oregon and really perfected a few strains. One was Big Skunk Korean. So it had a little bit of Korean in it. It had Skunk Number One, and it had Big Bud. It was like a combination of those. And there was a few variations of that one. And I ended up going to jail for 6 months in Oregon, 93. And that, those 6 months of doing maximum security, in a dormitory with 20 prisoners. I could keep my dreadlocks, and I made sure they gave me a vegetarian diet. But, like, I lost 6 months of my life for growing this sacred plant that's my only medicine right now, being an open-heart surgery recoverer for 13 and a half years. I know that this plant is sacred and it's one of the most healing substances on the planet. And the more research that gets done, it's going to back that up and back that up and back that up and prove it to be true until this whole planet legalizes it, frees it up, and lets people medicate with it and heal themselves.
Wow. So we're talking here today with Soma of Soma Seeds, Soma Papers. Did I miss anything?
Well,
besides a myriad of other beautiful
I'm
strains.
I'm a grandpa.
You're a grandpa.
Yeah.
And
a papa.
And a papa.
At the same time.
Speaking of papas, we have the one and only Danny Danko here.
Welcome.
Who's a papa himself.
And very happy to be here with you and Soma, Jackie.
Danny of Free Weed.
That's right.
He doesn't actually give away free weed. That's just the name of his
Oh, no, I give
podcast.
Away free weed.
Oh, you do?
On occasion.
On occasion. Legally,
on special
course.
Occasions.
Yeah, sharing is caring.
The concept behind the name Free Weed, too, is just to free the weed. And to so that so many people grow so much good herb that it becomes free. Like, you can just give it away because it grows next to your tomatoes and your, you know, your vegetables, and you share it with your neighbor. And all this commodity stuff of buying and selling ounces for $500, it's nonsense. It's all based on illegality and the black market and all of that, and all the bloodshed and all of the suffering, as Soma mentioned, 6 months in prison for growing a healing flower. I want people to have free weed. Yeah, basically, the more people that grow, the more free it becomes. And all the people complaining that, you know, they can no longer make a living and stuff, just grow great herb and lower the cost of production and you'll be fine. There's free sunshine out there and you can grow without nutrients. Is the reality is you can...
If you make the best soil up, which is what I'm doing these days with a friend of mine,
Here in Amsterdam.
Yeah. When you make the soil just right, you just got to add water.
How long have you been growing and consuming cannabis?
Oh, my God. It's outrageous these days because I've actually been growing. Well, I've been consuming cannabis for 51 years. I've been growing it since 1972.
Wow. Since before High Times.
That's the year I was born, 72. So that's 46 years.
Wow.
The influence that Soma has had is so tremendous.
There's a reason he's on the show.
Mm-hmm, right. And within the pages of High Times, a lot of the things that are really popular in cultivation now is sort of a return to, you know, farming in soil and using organic.
But he's
been doing that all along.
Yeah.
And so now that we're sort of looking for sustainability and all these buzzwords and stuff, he's been growing that way forever.
So no nutrients, no like advanced nutrients or like no extra.
Well, when you have a living soil, like a good soil, you just add organic material on top, like compost and things like that. And year after year, the soil just, you know, it just improves upon itself basically as you're adding organic material. And it's breaking it down, but you have mycelial activity and bacterial activity and all kinds of, you know, that's the livingness of that soil. But he's a pioneer of that.
Have you ever grown that way?
Only really outdoors, like guerrilla style, where you really you're at the mercy of the elements and you just throw stuff out there. And if it doesn't rain for a couple of weeks, you got to get out there with some water. And maybe you put a little bit of something in the water that you bring. True living soil is tough to dial in, but once you have it, like he said, you're just adding water. And he's been a pioneer of that, like I said, for many years. In the pages of High Times, in the book that he wrote, and his breeding practices too. I mean, his seeds are organic, the seeds that you buy. So the cost of cannabis is dropping pretty drastically everywhere. That means for the growers that you have to, you know, reduce the cost of production without decreasing the quality. And, you know, you can do that by going back to these old methods. Now the sustainable and all that is the buzzword, but organic growing and living soil has been for years, and he's been doing that. So, you know, when I first started coming over here in the mid-90s, he was here creating strains that were changing the world with those strains that he mentioned, like that Korean skunk.
I don't hear about that
the
these days.
The big skunk Korean. Well, that still exists in some of the genetics that he's putting out. And, you know, he's an inaugural member of the High Times Seed Bank Hall of Fame. It's pretty amazing what he's been able
to.
I honestly believe that he's part cannabis. Like he was grafted from a cannabis plant years ago, and a human and a cannabis mated and created Soma.
That's super hot.
Yeah.
I like my substances. I prefer other plant-based medicines over cannabis typically, but I do love cannabis, but rarely. And so when I do smoke, it, you know, it's got to have a certain, you know, je ne sais quoi to it. And your Amnesia Haze that you entered is fucking awesome. So it's so light and full of love. And the tell for me is when I forget that I've smoked, right? So when I don't have that voice knocking on me like, you're stoned in my head. And I just 3 hours later, oh shit, that was awesome, you know? And become a nicer person. So I love your sativa haze that you...
Yeah, all the different sativas that I try, I always think the Amnesia that I make is the best one. I mean, if I would love to see one that I like better.
Yeah.
But I haven't. And it's been many years that I haven't, you know?
Oh, shit, it just occurred to me why it's called Amnesia.
Yes, because you forget what you're doing. And if you
but
make,
in a good way.
Yeah, but I mean, if you make plans and you have everything planned down to the minute and stuff and you smoke a bunch of Amnesia, you change your plans. If I hadn't been oppressed so much in America from 1967 on.
Where were you born?
I was born in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Okay. I started smoking pot in New York City in 1967.
Nice.
You worked for IBM or something, right?
I worked for IBM on Madison Avenue and 57th Street.
Guys, look up a picture of Soma right now.
In a three-piece suit with clean-shaven, short hair, not over my ears, white shirt. And I didn't really... I was office boy, bottom of the totem pole in the mailroom, you know what I mean? In the bottom of the building. But I deliver mail to the chairman of the board, the president. I met Bobby Kennedy in the elevator one day, 2 months before he got killed.
Oh, wow.
And so, but I worked in the bottom of that building, and I was thinking, you know, 18 years old, I was thinking corporate lifestyle. It wasn't appealing to me. The more I researched it and became part of it, I go, this sucks. These are all alcoholics. I mean, fuck, man.
It's not really for most people.
It's not good air quality in these offices. You know, it's
the lighting.
Lunch break is too short. There shouldn't be a, you know. Okay, so anyway, I met this mail carrier. Inter-office mail carrier. And he came in one day and he said, "Do you ever smoke marijuana?" And I said, no, but I'd like to. He says, "Okay, tomorrow I'll bring you 15 joints." And
why 15?
For $5.
Got it.
Small ones, thin ones. And so the next day he brought me these 15 joints. I gave him the $5. Right after work, I went down to the East River, where nobody was around. I had some matches with me. I lit up one of these joints. And as soon as I finished it, I thought, holy shit, I really like this. This makes me feel so nice, I thought. I go, I'm amazed how nice this makes me feel. And so I only smoked it on the weekends back then. I'd go to IBM during the week, do my whole five-day thing, and think that I should never smoke it. Except on the weekends when I'm not working. But then after I started liking it more and more and more, I'd smoke it just before I went to work. I'd smoke it on my lunch break if I could. And I'd smoke it right after work. And then as I got into that cannabis mode, my hair started to grow past my ears. My sideburns started to grow. And in the morning when I was getting dressed, I go, I'm putting a yellow shirt on today. And I wear a yellow shirt with my suit. And one day, my boss, straight-ass Irish boss, called me and he said, you got to get a haircut. You got to cut those sideburns. And we got a white shirt policy. You can't be wearing yellow shirts and blue
white shirt policy.
So I said, I quit. And then my hair kept growing. I kept smoking. And I only thought about it as a kind of like an alcohol substitute. I never thought of it. I'm medicating myself. This is hitting my receptor in my being that all humans have that turns THC into another element that is the bliss molecule. And without that receptor receiving THC in a human's lifetime, you're susceptible to dementia and Alzheimer's disease and many other weakening immune system symptoms just because you didn't put the cannabis in that receptor. So we're all wired for it. All humans are wired for it. But most people are deprived, like vitamin deprived, like if you didn't get enough vitamin C. Well, cannabis is a major nutrient for this receptor in our brains because it strengthens the immune system, takes away stress, and makes you grow brain cells instead of wipe them out.
Nicely put.
Yeah, it sounds crazy, doesn't it? But it's true.
Yeah,
that's
feel,
the crazy part.
I feel way smarter when I'm high.
Oh my God, it's like...
But it's in breast milk, right? Like
cannabinoids.
Right. There are cannabinoids are in breast milk, yes, so that baby's receptors.
Yes.
You know. So you gotta receptors wanna recept.
Yeah.
And it's if you don't if they don't recept,
they go numb.
They
atrophy. They forget how to receive after a while. And so people that get to be 50 years old, or like me, I'll be 69 next month. People that get to be my age, that shit is fucking getting atrophied, and so it's too late to put the THC in.
You think it's...
Well, it's never too late, but it
would still help because it's such a curing plant, but...
I think it's also a matter of the kind of cannabis you're smoking. And
yeah, well, for sure.
You know, just like every material thing in the world, there's quality levels that are different. There's high quality like Mercedes and Rolls Royces, and there's junky cars, you know, real junky cars that you wouldn't feel safe.
Well, how's the quality changed here in the Netherlands?
Well,
here in Amsterdam.
You know, quality is always a very valuable thing to humans, no matter what the subject is. So as time progresses, quality awareness progresses too. The longer you research something, the more you find out about quality levels of whatever you're researching. It could be hats, it could be shirts, it could be trousers like these. You know, cannabis, 100% cannabis.
Oh, no
yeah.
Shit.
I make these here. This is one of my businesses.
Those are cannabis pants.
Is 100% cannabis trousers.
Those are
handmade,
dope.
Hand-colored, custom fit.
You
here.
Have like mad style, Soma. Like you got gold and pink and like mad style.
Well, you know, I'm going to be 69. You get to practice a lot of different styles, you know, by this age.
Yeah.
You know, you do.
But most people don't, I won't say most people, a lot of people don't really practice, right? Maybe it's because they don't smoke enough weed.
Okay, well, when you grow your dreadlocks for 33 years, it teaches you to practice some consistency. Because, like, even in growing or doing anything in life, whether it's being in the kitchen, doing recipes, you have to have consistency.
Discipline.
In whatever you're doing. And the more you practice that consistency, it gets, like, natural. You don't have to really stress about it. You just kind of do it in a consistent way.
Yeah. What do you say, Danny?
What's your favorite way to smoke hash and style of hash to smoke?
Okay. I love ice hash. And I also love rosin. But I love ice hash because it's not even heated yet. It's made with ice and water. And if you make it from excellent material, because it all starts with excellent material. If you try and make good ice hash from garbage, you're only going to end up with garbage. So many people will take like fan leaves even, or like not very good trim leaves, and expect that they're going to make this amazing full melt bubble hash with it, and they never do, because you need excellent material, like stuff that before you make the water hash, you look at that weed and you love smoking that weed just as weed in a joint or like in a pipe. You go, God, this weed is, I don't want to run out of this. Well, once you start at that level, and when I make water hash, I make it out of flowers. I don't make it out of trim. Yeah, once in a while, but I make it out of choice flowers that I
love. How do you make water hash for the lay people here listening?
Okay, well.
Including myself.
I take excellent flowers. I either dry them and manicure them totally, or else I manicure them and freeze them directly. So that's fresh frozen. So there's two different styles, either dried or fresh frozen. And you fresh frozen, you get more terpenes in the water hash, and dried, you get a little bit more stability. And so I take beautiful flowers that I love to smoke, I crush them up, I put them in a little washing machine, I spin it around inside of a mesh bag so the cannabis doesn't go into the water.
Like a cannabis washing machine.
Yeah, one of those. And then I spin it around for maybe 5 minutes, and then I'll take the first run out of there and put it through a 220, a 185, a 160, a 120, a 90, a 73, and a 45 screen. I let it go through those screens.
Those are the mesh sizes.
Yeah, different mesh sizes. And only a few of those meshes are going to give me the quality of hash that I'm looking for. The rest of them could be used for cooking or maybe making some oil with or something like that, some Rick Simpson oil. But like, you know, it's like there's only a couple of those screens, like the 90 and the 73 and the 45. Those are the only ones I would want to smoke.
Right. And you do one screen level at a time, or one number at a time?
Well,
or you put them together?
As you pour through it, they separate.
Got it.
Depending on the size of the trichomes.
Where do you get the screens for
the
that?
The screens you get from either Bubble Man or from Mila.
Ah, those are Mila.
The two, yeah.
Queen of Hash.
And so, once you have those screens and you have the correct starting material, and you need a lot of ice. So many people make it, and they don't put enough ice in, and then it doesn't come out right, because you need, the ice makes the trichomes freeze on the leaf, on the buds, and when you move it around, they get brittle and they fall off. And some trichomes are hooked. They don't go through the screens very well. They don't make full melt water hash. And then certain strains are straight. And those strains, when they break off making water hash, they make full melt because they don't have the hook. So there's two different types of trichomes that you find.
So yeah, I mean, he's looking just for the gland heads, right, of the trichome gland, and that contains all of the essential oil.
And you're finding that with a microscope, right?
Well, even naked eye.
You can see it naked eye.
You can see it with the naked eye, but you know, with a microscope, you can really get in there and see that there's just gland heads.
Yeah.
And you're looking at hash up close.
Yes.
And if there's stalks of the gland or if there's leaf material, that's a contaminant that could make it so it doesn't melt, right? And so the different levels of screens are basically making sure that it's just exactly the size of the ball of the gland head, of just the essential oil carrying gland.
So how do you use the ice?
You use the ice inside the washing machine.
Got it.
And it's spinning around, spinning around, spinning around, but none of the leaf is coming out. And it's about 1 degree above zero. It's almost, the water is so cold, if you put a thermometer in with all the ice in the water, it's like 1 degree above zero. And so that is getting it so brittle that it like just breaks off and flows through the screens. If it's too warm, it doesn't do that. It gets kind of gunky and like sticky. So you have to have it really cold so it's not sticky and it goes through the screens good.
Ice water, you know, it's important to have the ice there.
I love ice water hash. I mean, consuming it, but I had no idea how it's made.
Yeah,
it's like a real craft.
Well, the other part of it,
you have to dry it.
Right,
you have to dry it because so many people will make it. let's say you have the great material, you have the right screens, enough ice, you make the water hash, but what do you do when you take it out of the screen? What I do is I take clean, really high quality paper towels that don't fall apart easy, I put them down, and I lay the hash on that screen in the beginning just to get the main amount of water out. Then I take it and I put it on silicone, and I just let it sit on silicone that it won't stick to, and I give it like 2-3 days of really room temperature drying. Not heated drying, but...
So not in the sun, just basic?
Well, no, not in the sun. Just in a dry room, but not a really hot room.
You're basically in a race against time a little bit, but you don't want it to happen too quickly. It's this delicate balance of
yes.
getting the water out, because you've used water to basically extract the trichomes, and then you have this like wet, sandy mix, and you need to get the water out.
If you don't, it molds.
Yeah.
And not only does it mold, but even before it molds, it's the excess moisture makes it lose the terpenes.
Yeah. So it seems like a really intuitive thing.
You end up with this hash-looking-like substance, but it doesn't burn good, and it doesn't... You lost the medicine.
At what point do you know you've lost it?
When you taste it. Well, after a while, if you... You know, because sometimes when you're making water hash out of material you don't know, very well. When you're making water hash out of that kind of material, you only know afterwards, and sometimes... You know, like Bubble Man says, if it don't bubble, it's not worth the trouble. And I'm telling you, you can spend hours doing this, and at the end, you like even try. I always try it wet before it even dries, because that tells me if it's a bubble or not. And sometimes I'll put that wet hash in the pipe, it don't bubble, and I go, oh man, all that work for nothing.
So start to finish, how long does it take to make
a batch, including the drying time? At least 3 days.
Okay.
Yeah, and his whole thing has always been that just you got to know the plant you're growing, know the size of the trichomes. I mean, really live
with
it.
Super intuitive and a lot of love.
It's just like knowing a friend.
Yeah.
You know, it like when you first meet somebody, they're an acquaintance and you just met them. And if you keep meeting them and connecting with them and getting to know them better and getting more intimate with them, it becomes a deep friendship. And that's what you need to do with cannabis. If you want to have really good medicine, you got to connect with it like a deep friend. And if you're just meeting it, then it's like an acquaintance. You get to know it better and better and better, and then eventually it becomes such a good friend that you know what you're doing with it, and you know how to be loving with it and caring with it and thoughtful about it, you know?
You're like a weed shaman. Danny said he thinks you're part weed.
I am part weed. I mean, like... I consume weed all my waking hours. Last night I went to the sauna and I ate some of my candy. Do you ever eat my candy?
I'm afraid of weed food, but I'd have your candy for sure.
Well, I'll give you a little piece.
Okay.
I have a little bit with me because not only is it amazing medicine, but it's delicious.
Because that's important.
I have a YouTube video showing how I make it.
How do people find that? Just
Soma's Organic Hash Candy.
Boom.
Be careful. Do you know how people, like, when they leave your house, sometimes they leave their keys or their phone, maybe a bag?
Yeah.
I have a lost and found in my house.
He has a lost and found in his house. When people leave his house, they leave their shoes.
No, it's true.
Their
it's
shoes.
True. It's happened at least twice, like, because I always tell people to take their shoes off, and sometimes they just...
That amnesia
walk down the stairs, then they ring my bell again. And they go, hey, man, I left my shoes up there. And I've also had people take somebody else's shoes by accident because there's a few people over. And then all of a sudden somebody goes down and goes, Soma, I can't find my shoes. And we look, they're gone. And there's a pair of shoes there that nobody knows who.
You're turning people,
That's next
that's
level.
That's how the lost and found has started with shoes.
That's
he
amazing.
Has a lost and found at his house.
You also have you have a ton of crystals and like
oh
rock,
my God.
Rock
I do crystal therapy, crystal healing, and crystal energy work. And it all started because in 1983, I went to prison for cocaine and heroin.
How many times have you been to prison? Because I heard
twice.
Okay.
One, the first time for cocaine and heroin, lost my first set of dreadlocks. I did 25 and a half months in prison in Florida. And when I got out, I had to choose, am I going to get back into hard drugs? And I didn't want to do that. So I ended up getting one crystal. And that one crystal was like a seed. And I started rechanneling my hard drug energy towards the mineral kingdom. And I never touched hard drugs again. And that hard drug energy that I had built up in those 4 years that I did hard drugs, well, when it started to rechannel, it's still rechanneling. It has never stopped. And the crystals around me keep growing and growing and growing and growing. Like, I'm at the point now where I go, I'm not really looking for any other crystals, but they still come. But now I've actually started a legal business here in Holland, Soma's Sacred Threads and Stones. And now I start to market the crystals, not just do healing work, but actually start to help other people get minerals to heal with. And there's no doubt about how fine an energy crystals are. And for like rechanneling an energy like hard drug energy towards the mineral kingdom, it's blessed me. It's blessed me. And, you know, there's only 2% of hard drug users that ever walk away from it.
Yeah. So what was your entree into hard drugs? How did you go from smoking weed to
back in 1972 when I first did cocaine, it was kind of looked at as a positive thing.
Yeah.
Like a good party thing. It made you talkative. And
in its rare, in its original form, the coca leaf is super healing.
And when you look at the ritual, medicinal, spiritual use of coca leaf in Bolivia and Peru, you see that it has thousands of years of history of being a magical, sacred, healing teacher plant. But when you take one alkaloid out of the 22, the cocaine out of all the other alkaloids, and you isolate it like that, it still has positive uses. When somebody gets a nose job, they use cocaine to numb the area because it's not a vasodilator, it's a vasoconstrictor. So it makes you bleed less than the other numbing agents.
And we mix it with a bunch of shit on the streets, and, you know, it's like barely cocaine when it gets to
people. Well, when I did cocaine, I never cut it. In all my cocaine years, which was 12 years of cocaine, I never cut it.
It's probably awesome not cut.
Well, you know, especially at a, you know, it's like at my age, I've gone through many different evolutions, including going through the hard drug phase. And when I was in it, I really liked those things. I mean, I didn't think they was harmful to my being as they turned out to be, even in their pure forms, because I only did them in their pure forms. I'm not talking about cut stuff. Like when I did heroin and I did cocaine, it was very pure, and I was getting the full effect. And you know, I used to call myself Dark Mark back then, because I was losing my light. If you like mess around with those things too much, those hard drugs, they make you lose your light.
Or anything. If you mess around with anything too much, right?
Well, no.
I mean, especially those.
Well, you know, it's like if you drank too much water, I think you could hurt yourself probably. If you just kept drinking water.
So, I think people have died
because
of it.
So you have to do everything in a with wisdom. You have to use wisdom with whatever you're doing. You got to be wise about your here and now and your future.
Well, I feel like on Green Room, I'm on Green Room, and we have to talk about psychedelics, and we're here with Soma. And
we
Soma
must.
Is a psychonaut of sorts. And
yes.
Tell us a little bit about your psychedelic experience.
Yeah, because we've talked about cannabis, coca, heroin.
Okay. I've done...
Which aren't psychedelics.
Yeah. My favorite psychedelic is mushrooms. Although I've done all of them. I've done ayahuasca 56 times. I went to Brazil and I did it. I've done peyote. I love peyote also. I've done peyote many times. I've done San Pedro cactus. I've never done combo. Doesn't really appeal to me, but that's about the only one I never did. I've done this.
What's combo?
I've smoked the toad.
Oh, you smoked a toad? How is that?
Oh, I like that a lot.
Was that fast acting, like DMT, or
it's very long? Fast acting. It's 5-MeO DMT. And for me, it's even more natural than the other DMT because you just squeeze the glands of the toad that you can keep as a pet and feed them every day and take good care of them. And then they kind of let you, with gloves on, they let you squeeze the four glands on them onto a mirror, and you squeeze out this fluid. It's kind of yellowish.
Oh, my God.
And then you let it dry on the mirror. It takes about 24 hours. And when it's dry, you scrape it off with a razor blade and chop up. It's hard crystalline. You chop it up into powder, and you put a little bit in a pipe, and you take one big puff, and then you just lay back on your back, and it only takes 15 or 20 minutes. And you just see your higher self on such a clear level that it inspires you to promote that higher self when you come down from it.
That is psychedelic. I had no idea that's how you smoke toad. And you can keep the toad. That's a symbiotic relationship.
I have a friend I just met. He has 5 of them, those toads.
Oh, my God.
In Holland. And he promised me he would bring me some one of these days. So.
Can you divulge your mushroom tea recipe?
Ooh.
Yes.
Tea. Taking psilocybin using tea is a great way to consume it.
Well, okay. Growing all this cannabis, like in my can, people always ask me, what's in your can? I always tell them soma salad. Because I usually keep at least 5 different kinds in this can. Because when I roll a joint, I like to mix them all together. Because just like almost everything we look at in this material world has a different frequency. When you can measure frequency, you can see these different frequencies, not just in the radio and not just in crystals, because all crystals have different therapies, frequencies. And so, you know, when you look at frequency, there's a certain focus. And you need to have frequencies that get along with each other. Because everything, I believe everything on this planet starts with this one pure note, like a pure ohm, a sound that when you hear it with your ears, it just makes you smile. There's nothing but pleasurable feelings from this sound. I think this one note is where everything starts. And then you can take that one note, you can break it down into different harmonics, and it can be like chalk on a blackboard. Except it still started from that one pure note. So you can see chalk on the blackboard stuff in life, and you can see bliss. But it all starts from bliss in the beginning,
yeah.
You know?
And that's why you mix the weed together?
That's why, well, mixing the weed together gives me this mix of different frequencies that hits my brain more than any one strain could ever do it.
Yeah, you're like making perfume.
Yeah, Willie Nelson does the same thing. He just puts it all together and just grinds it up.
It makes a lot of sense.
Okay, so from learning that from weed, I started to do it with mushrooms. And I'd get like 7 or 8 different kinds of mushrooms. Everything from truffles,
mm-hmm.
from sclerotia, which is what truffles are, mm-hmm. to different mushrooms.
Strains, yeah.
Yeah, mushrooms, some that would grow on wood, some would grow on cow shit, some would grow on wheat straw, but like different types of mushrooms that had different mediums and different highs. And I'd mix them together in like a mushroom salad, and I'd do pretty large quantities in a gallon or a gallon and a half of tea. And then I'd only do these group sessions where they'd be like between 18 and 25 people in a circle.
And they're calling those journeys these days.
And I'd make playlists that were about 4.5 hours long. I have like 35 playlists.
With like what on it? Like Jimi Hendrix?
Music that's amazingly enhancing to listen to while you're on mushrooms. Because it would be a nonverbal experience
right.
for those first 4.5 hours.
To just sound frequencies.
Everybody would be so high, you couldn't even talk if you wanted to. And so, and it would be even hard to sit up and open your eyes, you'd be on your back with your eyes closed, just like leaving your body.
Were these your full moon ceremonies? Or is that different?
They were mostly on full moon, but got not it. Always. But okay. Many times they were on the full moon. Mm-hmm. Because I always did them on a Saturday. On a Saturday night, we'd start about midnight, and we'd go all night tripping. And then in the morning, we'd all have an amazing breakfast because we didn't eat. We were all fasting before we did the tea. And then I'd make an amazing soup and we'd all have a feast. And then everybody'd leave like 6 o'clock the next night. And there was live musicians. And I mean, after the playlists were over, live musicians that were doing the tea with me, friends of mine, we'd all start doing live music too.
That sounds so dope.
Pretty amazing.
Have you been, Danny Danko?
I have not. Mm. But the recipe is okay. Basically...
Oh, yeah, back to the tea recipe.
The recipe is about, let me see, 100 grams of dried, super high-quality mushrooms, mm-hmm. 20 grams of Hawaiian Copalandia, which are really strong, 200 grams of Philosopher's Stone.
What's that?
That's sclerotia. That's like...
Oh, shit. That's a strain?
Mycelium.
It's almost like the root of the mushroom.
It's the mycelium.
If you're thinking of the mushroom in terms of like as a plant, which it's not. It's a fungus. But if you look at it as a plant, it has mycelium below it. And then kind of like even under the soil, the part that's kind of under the soil.
Yeah, well there's even more to it. Sclerotia, which only a few psilocybin strains make, is a thing that mushrooms do in times of catastrophe. If there's a forest fire, if there's a flood, if there's a drought, you know, different things that would threaten the mushroom's existence. The mushrooms are able to make this root ball type thing that is very durable, has a long lifespan, and can actually manufacture its own nutrients and its own oxygen.
And is that the truffle that you can get here in Amsterdam still?
Right.
Okay.
Sometimes labeled as Philosopher's Stone.
Got it.
But it's a completely different feeling and vibe and energy that you get from that than you get from, say, like cubensis.
Yeah.
Like lab-grown cubensis from Oregon is a completely different mushroom with a completely different effect than
same
the Philosopher's
cannabis.
Stones here. And I think they're not allowed to sell dried ones here. It's just wet ones.
Yeah,
you used to be able to get them fresh, dried, all kinds of ways.
That.
You can still get kits here to grow your own fresh ones. Those are the kits are legal, even though the mushrooms aren't.
Yeah, you can
but
get spore kits
mushrooms
in the US
are one of the most healing things on this planet. Physically, emotionally, spiritually, they really can fix
you
up.
So you take that, you take...
The 100 grams of mushroom.
100, 200, mixed, 200.
Mixed mushrooms.
Mixed.
Yep. So it's a mix of a different psychedelic mushrooms.
20 grams of Copalandia, 200 grams of Philosopher's Stones, one peyote button, lavender flowers, peppermint, and maple syrup.
Amazing. And boil that?
Yes.
Let's geek out over mushrooms.
Let's digest this for a moment.
Which aren't really, it's not really mushroom tea alone, since
it's
there's peyote
like
in
a
it.
Pretty, it's a psychedelic broth of sorts.
It sounds like the goo I've seen recently on the West Coast, which is just
it doesn't quite get as thick as
which
that.
I don't like
yeah,
it doesn't, at all, but it sounds like I would love his mushroom tea concoction. Because there's so much love in it.
Right, and it's a whole experience. I mean, it's all of that. And what's interesting is that people just think, oh, magic mushrooms, psychedelic mushrooms. I'll eat them and I'll trip. It's such a deeper experience, and there's so many different. It's such a variety of experience from different ones, the Mexican ones and the Thai ones.
I
and
love Thai.
That's what's interesting. One of the other cool things about being over here, you know, I'm always talking about weed and hash, but if you're interested in psychedelics, Amsterdam's an amazing place for it. There's smart shops where you can pick up mushrooms, and again, they can't sell them dry, but you can dry them on your radiator of your hotel room or wherever, and you know, or just leave them out to dry or for a while, or eat them fresh. I mean, they're still effective. You just when they dry, they're more effective.
Yeah.
But there's all of that here. There's the Philosopher's Stones. There's you can pick and choose your mushroom experience. Just you know, don't fall into a canal.
Yeah.
Do us a favor. don't do anything crazy, but. you know, it is a town that, you know, allows for cannabis and hash, but also some psychedelic usage as well.
Yeah. We're in sort of that area, that like mythical, mystic area of the world where all, like, you know, fairy tales and shit came from. So it makes sense that they're also at least culturally friendly to psychedelics, whether they like to admit it or not. You can see it in their writings and their artwork.
Yeah. And Soma, I mean, obviously he's just been such a fixture of the scene here for so many years and such a major part of Cannabis Cup experience for, you know, the 31 years that we've been here doing this, you know. So yeah.
But that's so a common theme in
We're getting here. We are so we're at the boiling stage now. We've got
all
our mushrooms in a really big pot.
Yes.
And we've thrown some peyote and some flowers as well.
But not well we didn't put the lavender and the peppermint in yet.
Okay.
Because we boil the mushrooms. First. Oh, I forgot ginseng. I put 2 ginseng roots in the pot first.
So you're making like a mushroom stew with all of these elements.
So I start with 2 red ginseng Chinese roots. I boil them till they turn white. Then I put the mushrooms in. I keep boiling the mushrooms for about an hour. Then I turn it off, put the lavender flowers and the peppermint leaves in, and I put a top on the pot and let it steep for 20 minutes. Then I strain it through a strainer and add some maple syrup to it or some high-quality honey. And the lavender flowers, the peppermint, the maple syrup, the honey, makes it actually very palatable. Makes it taste like kind of an ambrosia, not like a... Because mushrooms don't really have the best taste, you know?
No, they do not.
But when you make a tea like this, the actual end product tastes better than kombucha.
Nice.
And so you... it's really easy to drink it down like a Dixie cup, a normal Dixie cup.
How much is like a normal or like an average size?
Whatever
portion?
Size a Dixie cup is, like about 6 to 8 ounces for a first glass.
And you're sipping
because,
on it.
Because we would do second and third doses sometimes.
Right.
Not everybody, but some
Which
people.
Which is what they do in ayahuasca drinks.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you done ayahuasca?
I have. Not in a ceremonial tea way. I've had it mixed with psilocybin in sort of a boiled down hashy kind of way.
Yeah. I don't like the taste of ayahuasca at all.
In
the 56 times I did it, I puked every single time. I was around people that didn't puke, and I wondered, how can they not puke? It's like sometimes I'd be doing it, and I'd go, wow, I don't think I'm going to puke this time. But I'd always do like 3 doses.
Yeah.
Like some people only do 1 glass. I do 3.
Oh, I believe
it. And sometimes I think, I'm not going to puke this time. I'm not going to puke this. And then the next thing I know, I have run to the bucket.
Well, I've heard that the puking is a result sometimes of how long, like the cooking process of it.
No. It's like me, after I puked, I would get so high.
Right,
oh
it's also
God,
a part of the entering
so
into the high.
Because like emptying whatever you
it's
puke.
It's a purge.
It's a purge.
Right.
I love psilocybin. I've consumed it for years. I love what listening to you talk about the energy and skill level and discipline that you put into every layer of whether you're making hash or psilocybin tea or mushroom tea. You know, ceremonies and ayahuasca and all that's becoming a lot more popular in the U.S. than it has been. And people are doing ceremonies all over the place, and they talk in length about the respect that you reframing, just not taking psychedelics because you're at a rave, for example, but like really consciously ingesting the plant-based medicine that I think we've sort of lost a bit in the States with cannabis. With it, people forget that it, I think, is a plant that should be treated with the same respect as psilocybin or ayahuasca, or consuming it in that way with a lot of thought and heart.
It should be treated immensely better than sugar cane. And look how much sugar cane is growing all over the planet. This cannabis stuff is the ultimate healing plant. It's the ultimate helper for humanity, and not just for sales and rope. I mean for 50,000 different amazing environmentally friendly products. This stuff is like a miracle plant. And it always was. It's only in the last 100 years that everything got like totally like
power and control, man.
Yeah, they think of us as like visionaries because we think we're thinking differently about this, but that's how it's always has been, and they're the ones that changed it to this crazy, you know, unjustifiable policy of you know, petrochemicals and, you know, nuclear reaction and stuff. It's like, keep it natural. And, you know, same as how Soma always encourages people to grow weed. Same thing, you know, bat guano, seabird guano. Mm.
Yeah,
you know,
like organic
things.
Materials, organic materials. Eat. And like not just looking at it like, oh, okay, it's a 10-week flowering plant. Let me check the calendar. Okay, like 10 weeks is up. Cut that. No. You got to look at the plant. You got to go, hey, friend, how you feeling today? And when the plant says, you know, you helped me out all these months, I'm ready to give you something back right now. This is a good time to pick me. And you go, okay, man. And then you look at the moon, because it's good to go with the moon, too, because the plants are totally, even when they're in a dark room, like they can't see the moon, they can feel the moon. And so they're going, yeah, man, it's about 7 to 10 days after the full moon, harvest time. The moon is waning, harvest time.
Are we? Ah, Soma. Okay. Well, right. Soma, I can't believe we have to cut it this short. You're a fascinating, fascinating character, and we're lucky to have your connoisseurship and contribution to High Times and cannabis and other plant-based medicines in general. We're so happy to have you on. Well, they're calling you to the stage now, but Danny, okay. What do you want to say?
Well, how can you learn more? People yeah. learn more about Soma Sacred Seeds.
Well, you can always go on Facebook or Instagram, Soma Mission on Instagram.
Soma Mission.
And then you can always like connect with me more through there.
Copy.
And that's pretty easy these days. Instagram is a good connector, you know.
It really is.
Yeah.
All right. We love you, Soma. Thank you.
Love you, too.
Love you. Thanks.
I love you, Mary Jane.